Good evening and welcome to another edition of Reporters Roundtable. We are coming to you live from the Voice of America studios here in Washington. I'm Douglas Impuga, and this evening we'll talk about Africa's natural resources and how they impact governance. With us tonight is Dr. Maji El-Ghizouri, a fellow at the Rift Valley Institute. The Rift Valley Institute is a non-profit research and training organization working with communities and institutions in Eastern Africa, including Sudan and the Horn. Dr. Ghizouri joins us from Germany this time. Good evening, Dr. Ghizouri.
Good evening, you're welcome.
Thank you. And Suleiman Mugula joins us from Durban, South Africa. He's an independent political analyst. Good evening, Suleiman.
Good evening, Douglas, and the listeners.
Thank you very much, gentlemen, for joining me on the show. And as I said, today we're going to talk about natural resources and governance. Africa has a large quantity of natural resources, including oil, diamonds, gold, iron, cobalt, uranium, and much more. But despite this abundance of natural resources, claims suggest that many Western nations, as well as emerging economic powerhouses like China, often exploit Africa's natural resources today, causing most of the value and money from the natural resources to go to the West and East Asia rather than Africa, further causing the poverty in Africa. So let me start in German there with Dr. Ghizouri. Despite this abundance of natural resources that Africa has, there seems to have been no benefit to the common man in Africa.
Yes, that's largely true. But I think the first point to consider here is that our natural resources are abundant. Technology isn't, and capital isn't. And to make good use of these natural resources, it is a requirement to have, first of all, the necessary capital, the necessary human resources, and definitely the necessary technology. And as long as that Africa's recent history goes, these important contributors to economy and industry have been provided either by colonial power, which is the period before independence, or after independence, it was mostly Western investors, apart, of course, from the very recent incursion of Chinese capital into Africa. And as you said, the balance of benefit here hasn't been even. In a lot of instances, it wasn't like Africans are not making money, but I guess the wrong Africans are making money. It was governments, corrupt officials, ruling elites who were making benefits from these resources in alliance, in cooperation with global partners, who saw that as a beneficial arrangement to both sides, be these partners colonial powers or recently the Chinese. So in most instances, the common man, as you aptly named, actually got the environmental damage and the resource deficit.
Suleiman, Dr. Ghizouri mentions the critical issue that this lack of technology And even that the governments don't seem to, when they get foreign investors, they put everything on the table and those guys take away, go with everything. So is that your assessment too?
Yes, the way he has said, what is practically clear, what is absolutely clear is that we have the resources. What is also clear is that we don't have the capital, the way he has said. But what is most critical in the world puzzle, jig puzzle, is that we don't have the leadership to be able to exploit the advantages which could be got from there. At the moment, I think, from the 1990s, when the developed countries forced us to democratize, unfortunately, the democratization which was forced on us, the package which was given has proved not to be good. The commercialized politics which was introduced in Africa, which resembles that in America and Europe, I think has destroyed the ability of the African countries to get the leadership which it deserves. Most of these African countries which people carry out elections don't produce real leaders who have got the intelligence, who have got the dynamism, which are innovative, which are sincere. We get leaders who are corrupt. We get leaders who are greedy. As a result, much as we could be able to make deals which could benefit Africa, the way my brother said, the deals which are put on the table they are shady, and the continent ends up losing more than gaining from what it sells out, especially in the extractive industries.
I see. Dr. Gizoli, what's the cause of this lack of responsible, just, and economically productive resource management?
Mm-hmm. Oh, it's a very abstract question. Let's just put it in the practical. Maybe that helps you answer it.
Uh-huh.
I come from a country that has made a lot of money from oil in the 1990s. The immediate finds in the Sudan were made probably in the late 70s by the Americans. But the Americans had a lot of conditionalities laid on resource extraction and joint investment in the Sudanese. And then sometime in the early 90s, Sudan tapped into Chinese capital. And the Chinese started a venture that was more or less, at that time at least, their biggest African intervention. And the conditions they laid there at the time were basically no conditions. They were just ready to deal with the government in office. And this allowed the government at the time to make quite large sums of money, putting Sudan from a low-income country to a middle-income country in a period of less than 10 years. They achieved impressive growth percentages. However, all this, because Sudan is such an unstable, difficult country with a difficult post-colonial course, all this essentially fed into the war raging at the time between Khartoum and the rebels in South Sudan,
mm-hmm.
the war that ended with the independence of South Sudan. So you could, from that, you could see that even when these resources are, in a sense, extracted and used and commercialized and marketed, the institutional deficits of these states and their bigger, wider problem, which has very little to do with the natural resources, but more to do with how these countries emerged in the post-colonial period, led to the squandering of all these resources and wasting into the pointless wars that grind on and on. And the situation today in South Sudan is not much different,
mm-hmm.
where after independence, these days were marking the first year anniversary of the war in South Sudan. And again, the same issues that have plagued the Sudan throughout its history as if are repeating themselves in South Sudan. It's in sense, you have a highly centralized government. You have regions around it that are essentially battling to achieve a share of that government and a share of the resources it controls. And you have a single resource economy, an economy based wholly on oil. And it's only recently South Sudan is probably making so little of the country to benefit less from its oil, secondary to the oil price drop in the recent years. So effectively, they're selling South Sudanese oil at a barrel price of $20 per day. It just tells you how poorly managed this resource has been and what little benefit it brings to the 5 million or so people who are today displaced in South Sudan, secondary to conflict.
Mm-hmm. So, Suleiman, is there a way these natural resources are contributing to an ending conflict on the continent? Because when there are funds available from these natural resources, it appears there's an impetus for governments that have these resources to squander them on wars. We've seen this in Sudan, as Maja just said. We've seen it elsewhere, where there's Libya, it used to be the flag bearer of having resources and then squandering them on conflict on the continent. Is there a correlation there?
Yes, so long as the leadership is corrupt, it all goes back to the leadership which we have on the continent. So long as there is political uncertainty, so long as there is lack of transparency in the governing system, so long as the leaders stay unnecessarily longer, a leader to stay in power for more than 10 years, in other words, to become a life president, what comes with the package of staying lawyer is longer is corruption, nepotism, and then all these ones create instability, and then you get those conflicts arising of the poor political management which we have on the continent. If you look at the continent, it will show you the trend which we have. Leaders have refused to leave power. Why do they refuse to leave power? Because there is benefit in it. What has come the trend on the continent now is that because of the benefits that comes out of the political leadership, leaders are now having their families succeeding them. And when you look at the richest people on the continent, they come from these leaders. Look at the daughter of Dos Santos, is among the richest on the continent. Theodore Obiang, the son, is among the richest. Nyasimbe, very rich. The junior Bongo, who is now Bongo leading Gabon, very rich. Kabila, look at Bia. I mean, you can see where the resources go. So it is not only the source of conflict, but it is also aggravating poverty, inequality, and suffering on the continent because of basically poor leadership which we have on the continent.
I see. Dr. Gizoli, now, according to Solomon, there it appears when the country has natural resources, then good governance and exploitation of these resources are incompatible.
Well, yes. I mean, at least that's the actual experience. You can't close the door on investments in natural resources in Africa. This is one of the continent's biggest wealth. But these investments look aside from the more structural problems that plague the continent, become a liability rather than an asset. And a natural resource like oil, you have to take the recent example of Libya, which essentially sits on them. Immense oil reserves, the tiny population that could effectively be the richest on the continent without any competitor, really. However, the institutional deficits of Libya and its post-colonial course, the legacy of Muammar Gaddafi and so on, ended this good story with the disaster situation you see today, where you have illicit groups fighting over control of that oil well and another oil well and this oil hub and the second oil hub. And none of the ruling elites can really come together and think around how can we resolve this to the benefit of all. It's not, of course, I understand the colleagues' focus on individual leaders, and they're definitely very corrupt individuals, but they don't only corrupt themselves, they also corrupt the institutions around them. So eventually you end up with a ruling class that is incapable of making any use of these resources and would rather squander them either on its own expensive taste or in endless wars that don't find a conclusion.
Yeah, so as you say, there's even the institutional corruption that you see where even there's oil exploration deals. They enter to them, those deals are not fair to the citizens. They are not fair to the countries, the African countries. You find deals, if you look at through these exploration agreements, of say for instance for oil, they are tilted towards the multinational corporations that actually tend to benefit where the oil slumps, prices slump, they still benefit. If the oil price is high, they still benefit. So it's a win-win situation for the multinationals. And a loss to those African countries, Suleiman.
Yes, and not only that in that context, there is also another context. There is the tax evasion. It is estimated that by 2011, the whole African continent had lost about $77 billion in illicit financial flows. Only Kenya, Ghana, Mozambique, Tanzania, and Uganda collectively put together, they had lost about $15 billion in tax revenues. So there is a tax evasion. So we have got both international corruption and national corruption. You have got all those rackets the way you have put them. So there is the continent at the moment is losing resources from all angles. Our own people, the ones in leadership, are stealing. The international cartels, the companies themselves are stealing through various ways. And then there are lots of peddling of resources around the extractive industries, which Unfortunately, because of the nature of the politics, the pervasive politics which we have on the continent, we cannot help it. As a result, the common man on the ground is the one suffering more and more. Lastly, unfortunately, again, apart from your program, Douglas, the unfortunate part is that our story as a continent is again told by the international cartels themselves. The very people who suck our resources, the very people who siphon our resources through the various means, they are the ones who tell our stories. They tell us of an African rising, of very good development indices which are going on. But when you reach on the ground, the way Ebola exposed us, you find that there are no systems at all. The infrastructure is not there. People don't have energy. They don't have electricity. The hospitals, some are not there. The medicines are not there. The social services are on the ground. But the story told by the World Bank, the story told by IMF, the story told by Europe is of a glorious rising continent which, in the fastest 10 economies in the world, 7 are from Africa, with the annual growth of very good percentages. Mm-hmm. But unfortunately, on the ground, the situation is different. So another form of corruption is the way our story is told. It's not told by Africa. It is told by the exploiters.
I see. Well, let's take a short break, and we'll continue our discussion of governance and Africa's natural resources.
Love African music?
Music time in Africa.
This is Heather Maxwell, and if you do, Music Time in Africa is the perfect show for you. Tune in to listen on the radio Saturdays and Sundays at 0900 2000 and 2100 UTC. You can also listen to the show day or night on the internet. Go to voanews.com and voaafrica.com and click on Music Time in Africa. You'll find past and present radio shows and a link to my blog, African Music Treasures. This is Africa through its own music. Oldies, classics, traditional music, Afropop, and fusion. You get it all right here in one beautiful bundle on VOA's Music Time in Africa.
Welcome back. This is the Voice of America in Washington, and you are listening to Reporters Roundtable. We are coming to you live from the Voice of America studios here in Washington. Our topic tonight, it's the African governance and natural resources. Our panelists are Dr. Maji El-Ghizouli, a fellow at the Rift Valley Institute, and Suleiman Mgula, an independent political analyst based in South Africa. Dr. Ghizouli, before that short break, Suleiman alluded to the role of international, multinational corporations and in exploiting the African resources and participating in the corruption that you mentioned earlier. What's your take on that?
Oh, you made a very good point about the International Monetary Fund and the World Bank. And, of course, the relationship of all this, the structural adjustment, the ideas that informed World Bank plans and IMF plans in the 1970s, leading, of course, to the conclusion that a lot of people named that period of time in Africa the missed decade of development. Of course, he also made a good example of Ebola, saying, well, how Ebola exposed the infrastructure deficit in West Africa. Of course, it did, because infrastructure provided by the state was degraded as a result of IMF program. This was a policy package. Any African country wishing to receive funding, to receive grants and aid from the IMF and the World Bank, which was virtually coerced into accepting policy models that resulted into the devastating infrastructure situation they have today. Mm. And of course, the same policy models led the IMF and the World Bank to produce figures saying Africa is rising. It is rising in the sense that there is increasing GDP. Yes, there is increased gross domestic product. I know this from my own country. Their gross domestic product shot from 1% to an increase from 1% to 7% annual increase in the mid-90s secondary to the oil. But this says very little about the actual productive economy. This just said there was more money flowing into state coffers, which in most countries that are reliant on natural resources develop the direction of a rentier state, a state that just depends on royalties coming out from mineral wealth and so on. So it's these figures that are produced by the IMF international institutions tell you something about the business environment for the same corporations that seek to make profit in Africa, but tell you very little about the actual developing states or the state of development in the same countries. And of course, there is no better example than Ebola. They hailed praise on Liberia for years, saying that Liberia took on an impressive post-war or post-conflict course. It followed the right policies. It did everything correctly. But post the first examination of the efficiency of the state bureaucracy and the efficiency of state services in providing something as crucial as basic health care for its population, Liberia proved itself an immense failure. And we had this devastating outbreak that could, when people are thinking about it now, it might not have been prevented, but it would definitely have been reduced to much lower figures had there been primary health care facilities in rural Liberia and rural Western Africa. Now, why these things don't exist is because of the policy models that African countries have been forced to follow through the 70s, 80s, up to today. And the same people who are corrupt or who are horrible dictators keeping up to their traditions over 30 maybe, these same individuals, of course, are very ready to follow these policy models because their existence depends on the big smiles on IMF faces, but not on the smiles of their own citizens.
So, in short, which means the ordinary African citizen gets the short end of the stick because they don't benefit. Even these so-called countries that are endowed with a lot of natural resources, I incur a lot of national debts, and the money is squandered, but the common man suffers.
Well, absolutely, I would agree with that very much. I mean, we have live examples for this. We have Sudan, we have South Sudan. Sudan debt has been increasing over the past 20 to 30 years. The figures that are now almost, and these figures are not even understandable anymore. You don't know what they mean when they tell you, well, it's a debt of I don't know how many billion dollars. For the man on the street, this figure is unintelligible. It doesn't state anything, but it has a big effect on daily life of people. The same could be said about South Sudan and a country celebrated as a fresh start, a fresh beginning in Africa. And within 1 year, we had this devastating situation where even the single natural resources the country has is threatened by warring factions. So it's not. I wouldn't blame Africa dictators alone. It's actually Africa dictators and the capitals behind them in the Western world that decide on policy, that define what are the agenda in Africa, that determine where the continent should go, that carry this responsibility. And they don't do these things out of ignorance. They do them out of full knowledge, because it's only in this situation that you can arrive at the cheap natural resources that Africa provides, and at these prices, at the prices available. And there is, of course, no better example than the Congo. Congo is a big pool of deep resources for any company to grab from. And this has been the situation over the past, since independence, and before under the Belgians. And nobody in the globe is interested in altering this, because this is provides secure, cheap natural resources for an industry that is ready to go after these resources wherever they are.
Suleiman, I think you would agree to that, because now the ordinary man and woman on the continent has not seen any benefit from this.
Yes, and I agree with the doctor that yes, the developed world has a very big contribution in determining our direction as a continent. But we should also appreciate that if we have got a dynamic leadership, democratic leadership, which harnesses the people of the country, they will be able to withstand the pressure coming from the West. For example, you will very much remember that when the Structural Adjustment Programs, or IMF, actually AGOA, let's put it AGOA, when it was given, when President Clinton offered it to Mandela, after President Mandela had looked at the conditionalities which were coming with the AGOA, he openly and directly told Clinton in full face, in direct face, that he won't take, South Africa won't be able to take that privilege if it comes with the conditionalities the way they have been outlined. So long as the conditions are going to disadvantage the population, then they better stay with them. Now, the paradox of it is that why the European or developed countries take advantage of us is that the African leaders, these dictators, tend to operate as individuals. If they were operating democratically, they would be able to draft policies, to make policies that are pro-people, which they could stand firm with the backing of the people. Otherwise, without it, that is why we have got the structured adjustment programs, which went the way and just devastated the continent up to where we are right now.
As we conclude, Dr. Gizuli, now, what's the way forward? What can be done about Africa getting something? Africans, I mean, people there getting something from the abundant natural resources? Briefly.
Well, let's say this briefly, yes. I think there's a lot of space for African within Africa cooperation between African countries rather than cooperation between African countries and Western patrons. There's a lot to say about South-South cooperation. We've seen emerging powers coming in. Aside from China, there's India, there's Brazil. These are countries that Africa can deal with, probably with conditionalities that it might be able to state itself and determine itself. It can contribute to these agendas and rather than just be a recipient of this agenda. And of course, there's a lot to say about democracy, and this is a very big and troublesome question in the abstract, of course. It sounds very well. But my colleague earlier said the commercialization of politics in Africa, secondary to the democratization drive in the 1990s, has failed to produce an efficient leadership. So the question on the table is, how do we arrive at these efficient leaders?
I see. Suleiman, briefly. Same question.
Number one, I agree with my colleague that South-South cooperation can help us. Definitely, the solution is not in direct foreign investment from outside, but if we can trade, even within ourselves, we can generate resources which will be able to put this continent to a second level. Number two, most important, I believe, that we need to change the leadership. We have got leadership which is rusty. When you look at the Obiang, the Mugabes, the Nyasimbes, the Musevenis, the Kabiras, the Dos Santos, the Bias, Idris Deby, Yaya Jume, Bashir. I mean, these are not the leaders to carry the continent forward. These are rusty, and they don't move. Look, compare with Ouattara, compare with Maxa, compare with Sata before he died, compare with the Ghana leadership. I mean, there is a total difference between dynamic leadership and the rusty leadership which we have on the continent. So I believe that without changing leadership, we won't be able to move an inch.
I see. Well, gentlemen, we are out of time, and we'll continue to monitor how African resources are helping or not helping the continent. And that wraps up this edition of Reporters Roundtable. Now, thanks to my panel, Dr. Maji Al-Gizuli, a fellow at the Rift Valley Institute. Thanks a lot, Doctor.
No, thank you very much, and thank you for having me.
You're welcome. And thank you to regular panelist Suleiman Mugula. Suleiman is an independent political analyst based in Durban, South Africa. Thanks, Suleiman, as always.
It is always a pleasure.
Thank you. And that's it for this week, and we'll be back again next week with another edition of Reporters Roundtable. By the way, in case you missed any part of this program, you can still listen to it if you go to our main website at www.voanews.com, click on Programs and scroll down to Reporters Roundtable. Once again, thanks very much for tuning in, and I'm your host, Douglas Impuga in Washington, wishing you all the best.